Computer Systems, Motorsports Land, Tri-State Office Supply, AAA Tire and Service Center, Argon's Carpet, and Jones Paint and Glass. And here, with all the play-by-play action, Mr. Larry Jewell.
Thank you, Jeff Wall. Larry Jewell with you live from the Hanson Stadium. And we're here just in time to see the first skydiver come through, land right at midfield at the 50-yard line with the game ball. We have a series of skydivers that are coming through right now. One of the things that's been taking place today is celebration. It began last night, actually, with the Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl Banquet featuring Bruce Hurst, a St. George native who is a left-hander with the Boston Red Sox, now involved with salary negotiations between the Red Sox and Bruce, and also San Diego Padres and a number of other teams. We'll be talking with Bruce at halftime. Once again, the next skydiver comes through, lands on the south 40-yard line, almost on the Rotary Bowl football. Today, there's been a parade. Now we're into the skydiver portion, dropping of the game ball. We've had a band concert already by the University of Utah marching bands and several of the high school bands from around the area. This skydiver is going to hit where? At the 50-yard line. So we've had two 50s, one 40-yard line, and quite a spectacular event so far. There is the game ball tossed by the third skydiver to the officials, and we're about ready to welcome onto the field the two teams. This is the third matchup in the Rotary Bowl. The first two games of the Dixie Rotary Bowl this year, the Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl, have been two of the most exciting games that I've ever had a chance to broadcast. Each one of them ended up as a three-point victory for Dixie College. And if possible, each game gets a little bit tighter. Last year, it came right down to a field goal by Pete Reese right at the end of the ball game that made the difference for Dixie. That three-point victory. We're about to go to Jim Coleman, the chairman of the Rotary Bowl Committee, and his presentation to the Grand Marshal, Bruce Hurst. Bruce seems to be signaling for his wife, Holly, to also come forward. Let's double-check. Bruce Hurst, nope. Let's check. Representative from the Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl, from the Sunbrook Corporation also. Let's see if we can pick up Jim Coleman.
We're delighted to have our favorite son, Bruce Hurst, with us to assist me in a presentation. Here for Bruce. I'd like to have Bruce help me make a special recognition to Mr. Max Brotherson with the Sunbrook Development Corporation. We're proud to have them be a major corporate sponsor with us here today to make this grand occasion possible for us. Bruce.
Presentation from Bruce Hurst, a big plaque to Max Brotherson of the Sunbrook Corporation.
Thank you, Max.
The corporate underwriter of this particular bowl game. Let's look at these two teams. We'll take a look at their records and what to expect today. Let's take a 90-second break. We'll be back with a look at the third annual Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl. Dixie versus Inverhills College of Minnesota, back in 90.
I got $1.69 now, what'll I get? Don't want nothing that'll put me in debt, but I'm a working man, and I eat my share. I want a cold cut combo from you know where.
Subway feeds the working man. No one makes a combo like Subway can. Three kinds of meat, that's what I said. Cheese and three fixings on fresh baked bread.
Subway sandwiches on North Bluff, 700 South, and in Cedar City.
Winning is a habit with the Dixie College Rebels, and at Sun Capital Bank, you are always the winner. And that's the way you are treated by the friendly staff. You can't find a better place to put your money, where savings accounts and CDs all earn the highest interest rates. You can even get an interest-bearing checking account at Sun Capital, and all accounts are FDIC insured. There are two easy-to-find locations, one on South Bluff and one on 100 East. Sun Capital Bank, the money place.
Southern Utah Computer Systems, your authorized Apple dealer, wants you to meet the top achievers. They are more than just good students. They're quickly becoming Apple computer experts.
Back at the Hanson Stadium, where we're about to give you a little bit of insight into these two ball clubs. First of all, Mike McGarry is joining me today. Mike, welcome to the microphone.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here again.
You've had a busy day so far.
So far. Started out early, but
good to be here and get ready for a great ballgame. Now, let's take a look at the Giants of Inver Hills, Minnesota. Actually, from Inver Grove, Minnesota, which is a suburb of St. Paul. For Dixie, the Rebels of St. George, this is their third year in the third year of the Dixie Rotary Bowl. Dixie coming up with three-point victories in each of the first 2 years against Kansas opponents, Butler County, and last year Independence College out of Kansas. This year, Dixie going a little farther afield as far as their opponent, and the Dixie Rotary Bowl Selection Committee reaching into a ball club that has yet to experience postseason play until today. Inver Hills College out of Minnesota, part of that Minnesota Football Conference, has been a power back there, but unheard of outside of the Minnesota region. This year, Inver Hills went 6-2 on the season, losing initially to Wilmer College 21-14, then stringing together six straight victories before losing in the closing game of the year to Normandale College, a nationally ranked team, and they lost in a very narrow loss, 23-14, actually. That was much closer than that final nine-point margin between Inver Hills and Normandale. In between, there were victories over University of Minnesota, Waseca, Anoka Ramsey College, Rochester Community College in the Minnesota area, North Hennepin Community College, and one of the powers out of Iowa, Iowa Lakes College. For Dixie, the season began on a plus side as Dixie came up with a victory against Eastern Arizona, 44-0 at home, or on the road. They came back with a 41-11 victory against Arizona Western, one at home against Scottsdale Community College, 46-7, lost a narrow one on the road to a very powerful Mesa Community College Thunderbird team, 28-16. Then came back for non-conference wins over the Weber State JV, 68-8, and over the BYU JV, 55-2. Defeated a nationally ranked Ricks College team, 58-10. And I might add, Ricks College, the victors in the Centennial Bowl, and a big way over Walla Walla Community College, expected to be in the top 10 in the final balloting. Dixie then came up with a loss at Glendale Community College, 28-14, a very tight game down there, and we might add Glendale in line to be the national champion. It's all over, but the official balloting is Glendale defeated third-ranked Grand Rapids College in the Valley of the Sun Bowl game earlier this, just 2 weeks ago. In fact, just a week ago, as Glendale Community College went undefeated, and Dixie losing a heartbreaker at Snow in what turned out to be one of the odd games of the year. Snow 31, Dixie 21, then Dixie finishing with a huge victory at home against Phoenix College, 51-7. We'll wait and see how things go today for Dixie and for Inver Hills. Let's take a 90-second break. We'll be back with a kickoff. Dixie Rebels versus the Inver Hills Giants back in 90.
Subway sandwiches in
the stadium about ready to get underway. We've had all sorts of excitement today, participating in the parade also this morning. A lot of fun with that. XV Kelly and Kent McGregor and I, and of course we had a couple of members of the KFMB staff in San Diego who made a special effort to come up and try to persuade Bruce Hurst to sign with the Padres. Jeannie Cavett and Sandy Bannister, who came up from KFMB in San Diego, also rode in the parade with us. It was a lot of fun. And Mike, they loved your comments about them on the air.
Oh, did they hear that?
They did.
Well, I hope they pay a little money. Give me no, I was just kidding. That was nice to have them come up, and I know they've had a lot of fun. And of course, San Diego is very much in the running to hopefully get Bruce Hurst for them. And I know a lot of people here locally have a lot of interest in seeing. Is he going to go east or west?
A lot of loyalty to the Boston Red Sox. Near home is the San Diego Padres. We'll ask Bruce about that at halftime. About ready to get underway. Inver Hills College will be back deep to receive. Numbers are going to be a little tough to pick up. We'll try to do it. And it looks back extremely deep. Let's see if we can pick up the number. Number 25 back there seems to be the man. Correction, 23, Kevin Murray. Let's double check. 26, no, Scott Goflin. Goflin is the man. It's going to be a little tough on the numbers, it looks like, for Inver Hills College. The boot by Frank Lehman, low and driving, and will be picked up at the 18-yard line, taken by Inver Hills Community College, and across the 20, down near the 23-yard line, is number three, Wayne Hawkins. Hawkins is the man to watch today. Hawkins, wide receiver, All-American candidate. So from the Inver Hills 18, mark it down near the Inver Hills 23-yard line, and first down and 10 for Inver Hills at their own 23-yard line. Mike McGarry, D. beautiful day for football, no question.
Oh, you couldn't ask for a better day for football. Someone knew something when they picked this take. It's absolutely clear and about 65 degrees perfect.
Quarterback for this ball club is number 6, Jeff Lutz, All-American candidate also. Lutz, one of the top passers in the nation. They like to pass, throwing the pass, a little swing pass intended out there, I believe, for Wayne Hawkins. Let's pick up the number as we go on the left side. And Lutz throws it incomplete. Lutz on the incompleted pass intended for Hawkins. Second down, 10 yards to go at the Inver Hills 23-yard line. It's going to be a little tough, we mentioned, to pick up the numbers on the uniforms. Number 10 coming to the near side is Ted Berry as a wide receiver. Farther out on the near side is Wayne Hawkins. So a double stack on the right side into a shotgun formation for Lutz. Two running backs back there for the Giants of Inver Hills College. The snap is high, back to Lutz. Lutz on a quarterback draw across the 25 at the 30-yard line. Lutz fumbles the football right into the hands of Dixie Sid Smith at the 33-yard line. Smith the other way, inside the 20, down near the 18. So Lutz gets to the 25-yard line and fumbles the football, Mike.
Yeah, what a fumble it was. He was hit hard from the side, and the helmet hit right on the ball, popped it straight up in the air and right into the hand of the Dixie defender. And what a good job. He looked like a running back going the other way. And if this is a game of breaks, Dixie has the first big one.
Almost to the 27, where that was picked up by Smith, who ran it back from the Inver Hills 32. It's first down and 10, and mark it at the 19-yard line. That coming with 14:40 left in the first half. Handoff going to Sean Hutchinson, and Hutchinson across the 19 down near the 17-yard line. So the first fumble of the day goes into the hands of Smith, and because it was in midair, the fumble was returnable and brought back to the 19-yard line, down to the 19. So from the Inver Hills 19, it's down to the Inver Hills 17-yard line after the run by Sean Hutchinson. Second down and about 8 yards to go for Dixie College. Quarterback is Brooke Burley, the sophomore. His second year with Dixie. Handoff goes to Hutchinson. Cuts to the outside at the 10-yard line. Hutchinson trips up, has the first and goal. Inside the 10, down near the 7-yard line. So it'll be first down and goal to go near the Inver Hills 7-yard line. Sean Hutchinson is off and running again. Hutchinson breaking the 1,000-yard barrier this year, Mike, and you can see why.
Absolutely. What a tremendous run. He was, looks like he was going to be stopped at least 3 different times. He was, instead of moving forward, he'd do a quick sidestep laterally and picked up the first down, and now they have a first and goal.
Just across the 7-yard line on the Dixie side. It's almost 7.5 yards to go. I formation on the running backs. Actually, a power I formation with the tight end, the first man. Handoff goes to Rod Staley. And Staley down near the 5-yard line. Let's see where they mark it. Inver Hills, I think, thought that they might have had a fumble on that. But no, they had the stop defensively instead. Coming up, Inver Hills, number 96, DeLon Goins. And Goins is a man to watch today. 6'4", 305-pound defensive lineman out of Louisiana. Put it at about the, just across the 5-yard line. So a gain of almost 2 yards by Rod Staley. Second down, goal to go. Rod Staley, hometown boy, Pineview High School grad. In motion, tight end Alfred Sapunu, right to left. Dixie with the pitch to the tailback. Sean Hutchinson trying to cut inside. Hutchinson, touchdown. Got the block from Papuno and from Greg Stokes. And the fans are alive with 12:56 left in the first quarter of play. Sean Hutchinson has the first touchdown of the ball game, and Dixie leads 6-0 over Inver Hills College. Frank Lemon, the Las Vegas native, side-winding kicker, to put the foot to the football and to hold Brooke Burley, trying to make it 7-0. So Inver Hills, turnover costly. The snap is high and to the right. Lemon drives it through and misses to the left side. So it's 6-0 Dixie with 12:56 left in the first quarter of play, back in 60 seconds. Hanson Stadium, Dixie with a 6-0 lead set up by the fumble recovery. And Mike, you have to take advantage of the turnovers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what any coach will tell you. You take advantage of opportunities given to you. They did. Hutchinson had 3 runs, picked a total of 18 yards, and a big TD.
The kick coming down to the near side. Wayne Hawkins takes it to his own 3-yard line. Hawkins on the fly at the 10-yard line, cutting to the outside, looking for the block, doesn't get it. Dives across the 15 and is down near the 18-yard line. Feet cut out from under him by number 21, Nate Hansen. Also out there on the coverage is number 4, Britt Johnson. But Hansen is a man who is a kamikaze ball player. He'll stick his face mask into a lot of sacks.
And a good open field tackle that time. He's going to put the shoulder down and just clip the legs right off underneath the runner, and he had no chance. So held him underneath the 20, and that's a good start for the defense of Dixie.
First down and 10. Put it once again at the 18-yard line this time. First and 10 at the Inver Hills 18-yard line. Jeff Lutz, the quarterback, back to pass. Dixie with the pressure. Lutz takes off up the middle. Lutz will be brought down with a 2-yard gain. Grabbing him from behind is pick number 75, John Baker. Baker on the tackle. And once again, we'll be making a selection of our KDXU offensive and defensive players of the game. Even in this one, yes, we'll be making the selection before the day is over. So a gain of actually 3 yards by the quarterback, Luke. That's a way of trying to keep that defense a little honest, Mike, is that quarterback draw. Back into a shotgun formation. Lutz back with 2 wide receivers to the right. The snap lofts neatly into Lutz's hands, throws it, intercepted by Kaylor Daly. Intended on the right side for Hawkins, and Daly with another pass interception on the air. Kaylor Daly, another turnover for Dixie.
Boy, Dixie is making them count here early, and Inver Hills digging themselves a real hole. One thing you don't want to do is get behind in a game, especially if you're on the visiting or the other team's home field. They've come a long way to play this game, and that simply was just, it's a timing pass. The timing definitely off as he threw it right in the hands of the defender. His man had actually fallen down.
About a 4-yard return from the 20 down to inside the 16. It's first down and 10 for Dixie. Inside the Inver Hills 16-yard line, just barely inside. I formation on the running backs, almost to the 15. The pass, Brooke Burley lofting to Brent Nyberg. Touchdown! Burley to Nyberg, and Dixie, boom, boom, and 12-0 with 12:05 left in the first quarter of play. Dixie has jumped on Inver Hills early. 2 mistakes set up by the defense, and the offense capitalizes. Not a whole bunch in the way of offense in terms of yardage, Mike, but points, yes.
Well, that's what you need. I mean, there's a lot of teams that give up a couple of 100 yards to put points on the board, so Dixie obviously happy with the 12 points so far.
To do the kicking, Frank Lemon. The snap this time right on line, and Lemon drills it to the right side of the goal. It's in there anyway. It gets in there. Make it 13-0, Dixie, with 12:05 left in the first quarter. Back in 60 seconds. 13-0, Dixie with the lead over Inver Hills in the Rotary Bowl. The kick coming down into and out of the hands of Wayne Hawkins. He picks it up on the bounce and steps out of bounds at about the 13-yard line. Took it at about the 9-yard line from the Inver Hills 9 to the Inver Hills 13. And Inver Hills has not really had good field position, Mike.
They've been right in the shadow of that goalpost, so to speak, the entire time they've been on the field. And they've really got to get something going. I mentioned last time you don't want to get down, but you've got to get something going for the offense to get them into this ball game. Of course, Dixie very content to see how their defense is playing so far.
Defense has been tough for Dixie this year, especially at home. Seldom do they give up touchdowns. The problem has been Dixie has picked up 3 losses on the road this year. It has not traveled well. Jeff Lutz hands off to the running back, and a flag on the play. Getting into the middle of that line is Diedrich Henderson. Diedrich Henderson. Henderson, a 5'6", 150-pounder. That's what he's listed as. He looks a little bigger than that on the field. Flag on the play almost immediately, and Inver Hills having a tough time getting started. Let's see if it's against Dixie. It is. 5-yard penalty. 5-yard penalty against Dixie as they're a little anxious on defense this time. Dixie cannot afford now to let down their guard. This Inver Hills team has been known to be explosive this year on the offense. Second play, once again into the shotgun formation. In motion, actually trying to set up as number 10, Ted Berry, wide receiver, and ends up in motion. Throwing deep to the outside, Wayne Hawkins was out there, only he turned to the wrong side. Jeff Lutz threw to the left, Hawkins turned to the right, incomplete pass.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a mix-up in between quarterback and receiver or if he just threw it the wrong side, but he was wide open and gotten by the defender a good 2 or 3 yards. As you mentioned, he looked back to the inside of the field. The pass came to the outside, and by the time he got turned around, it fell. So they're going to come out firing, it looks like. Wild day of sports here on KDX. Yeah, this is the first of a triple header. Plus, we have two on our sister station, Easy 93 today. Second down, 5 yards to go from the 18-yard line of Inver Hills, and the Giants trying to get on track. Shotgun formation, Lutz looking to the right, looking to the left, now starting to take off upfield, doing a little fancy running. Lutz across the 20, down near the 22-yard line. Suddenly, Lutz taking his lump. Sid Smith in the middle of that stack. Also in there is David Morrison and Howard Reeve. Reeve, All-American candidate, definitely. He was unanimous choice as the most valuable player of the conference this year in the Western States Football League. Unanimous.
Absolutely. That's something you don't get very often. But Dixie has shown, even though their record is not as sterling as it has been in the past, they still have the individual talent.
Gain of about 3 yards on the play. So make it third down and 2 coming up. A short 2 yards for Inver Hills. Back into a normal formation. Yes. Lutz under pressure. Sack on the play. Blowing through there is Howard Reeve, and a sack on the play. Reeve exploded through the line. A loss on the play. It's fourth down coming up, and the sack belongs to Howard Reeve.
Well, that was just a perfect timing play. He was, of course, lining up in his linebacker position, and he just took off anticipating the call. Had to kind of stutter just a moment at the line of scrimmage, but he was in the backfield the same time the ball reached the quarterback, and Lutz had absolutely no chance to do anything but to duck and go to the turf.
Fourth down, 7 yards to go, almost 8 yards to go, inside the 16-yard line, punting situation. Back deep to punt will be Greg Reese. Reese, 6'2", 170-pound freshman from Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota, which may be a suburb of Inver Grove. The kick coming down, taken at the 45-yard line by Parker Ragsdale. At the 40, at the 35-yard line, wrestled out of bounds inside the 35, down near the 34-yard line. Pushed out of bounds there by Inver Hills' combination of Darren Glazier and number 44, Earl Dunklin. So on the punt by Reese, not a bad return by Parker Ragsdale.
He did a good job. He took it back on his own 45 and got a little bit of a wedge to move to the outside. Picked up, looks like, down near the 30-yard line. Now we're going to have him mark off as a major penalty. He's going to be called against the Dixie Rebels. So that'll march it back right out to midfield. And even at that, not a bad position to start on your third offensive attempt by Dixie.
So Ragsdale with the return, but a 15-yard penalty. Ain't latched on to that. And that puts Dixie right at midfield. First down and 10. The worst field position they've had so far. First down and 10. Right at midfield for the Dixie College Rebels. Wide receivers on each side for the Rebels. I formation on the running back. Jumping early on the right side is defensive lineman number 70. That's Chris Goble. And I think Inver Hills may have seen some movement along that offensive line. The officials pointed in Dixie's direction. So a 5-yard penalty coming up. Procedure call against Dixie. So make it first down and 15 and put it back at the Dixie 45-yard line. Scott Brumfield, the man?
I think it was. They looked at it, and a couple of linemen, defensive linemen, kind of pointed in his direction, and he walked back just a mite sheepishly. So he may have moved out of his stance or something, cost him 5 yards.
Brumfield, the freshman lineman, an easy target at 6'8", 305.
Not hard to find out there. Yeah, easy to find where he's playing at.
Playing his shadow half the day. Right side, Kendall Smith. On the left side, Brent Nyberg, All-American receiver candidate also for Dixie. We have two All-American receivers candidates. Fake the handoff to Rod Staley. Sack coming up. Brooke Burley is dropped in his tracks by number 44, Earl Dunklin. Linebacker got through, and Dunklin the man to the sack on Burley marks it back to the 40. Make it second down. 20 yards to go. Dunklin, the hero that time for the Inver Hills Ball Club. And that's what Inver Hills needs.
Absolutely. Dixie continuing to roll up yardage. Actually, they're going the wrong way this time. They started up on the 35 before the penalties and problems, and they're clear back on their own 40-yard line.
Second down, 20 yards to go, coming up for the Rebels. I formation on the running back. So Nyberg to the left, Smith to the right.
Handoff goes to Sean Hutchinson. Stopped at the line of scrimmage. Staggers forward for a couple of more yards. Drop there. And Enver Hill starting to get excited. You can see it now. They are getting quote-unquote pumped. Charlie Drake involved in there on the tackle that time. A gain of a couple of yards up to the Dixie 42-yard line. Third down, 18 yards to go. And that may be a gift. Make it more like 19. Gain of about a yard and a half. A short 19 yards, if you will, just across the 41-yard line. Dixie with the football. Third down, very long yardage. Dixie's been known to go to the pass on occasion. Back to passes. Burley throws to the outside, intended for Hutchinson, way short. Incompleted pass. Punting situation for Dixie. So right now, this is an even match. Save the turnovers by Enver Hill.
Yeah, it really is. Of course, yeah, that's a big part of the ball game is turnovers. That time, however, I think we need to give credit to the linebackers from Enver Hill, because they were into the backfield applying pressure and did not allow Burley any time to set up and forced him to throw a little bit beyond his man.
Dallin Carter, the punter for Dixie, faking the punt. He's going with the pass. Nobody covering. Pass to the left side. Nate Hansen across the 40, across the 30. Hansen's going to go all the way for the touchdown. Touchdown pass of the year by punter Dallin Carter, as they must not have seen that in the Dixie film. Dixie has a regular play. You line up with a wide receiver on the punt, and if nobody covers, the pass is there, and Carter did. The pass completion for the touchdown. 8:27 left in the first quarter of play, and it's 19-0. Dixie, wow, razzle-dazzle and score.
Absolutely. A little bit surprising. Dixie would be a little bit flamboyant at this point of the game, because they have a pretty good-sized lead very early in the ballgame. Things seem to be going away. That's one out of the playbook, and it works.
Enver Hill calling a timeout. A little bit of a problem with the ball players on the field. The number of helmets with a number of yellow helmets out there. Enver Hill's with a... It looks like a substantial group of fans who have made the trip all the way from Minnesota. Of course, when they left, it was 0 degrees outside. I understand it's warmed into the low 40s in Minnesota. So that's a heat wave in December in Minneapolis.
It probably would be in the 40s. On the air this morning, I think our low was about 33 degrees. So our low and their high were about 10 degrees different. Of course, here we're in the mid-60s. But as I was saying a few moments ago, a little bit surprising Dixie would pull something like that this early in the ball game. Because really, Enver Hill just needs something to get them going, and to stop the Dixie at midfield and get the ball back may have been that something. But as things go, it worked for Dixie, and here they are knocking on the door again for another point.
Keep the opponents from getting some momentum back. To do the kicking, Frank Lemon. The time is back in to hold is Brooke Burley. The snap, this one is good. And Lemon puts it up and make it 20-0 Dixie with 8:27 left in the first quarter, back in 60 seconds. Coming. Back at the Hansen Stadium, we had a dignitary introduced, and I didn't catch who it was, Mike. Whoever it is, we're glad to have him with us. We're having dignitaries introduced all over the place. We're happy to have them here, whoever they are. The kick coming down to about the 10-yard line. Big hole opens up at the middle, at the 30-yard line, at the 40-yard line. A saving tackle made by Dixie. Coming is Goplin. Goplin began inside his own 5 and was finally upended there by number 26, Sean Dunn, I believe, was the man who made the saving tackle. It was Dunn. So a big run back by Goplin. You can tell that there is some firepower with this Enver Hill team.
Absolutely. That was great. Right at the middle of the field, he just found a crease, went straight ahead, and he had one more man to beat. He didn't do it, or he'd have been in for 6 points, and that would have turned the game around in a hurry.
First down and 10 at the Enver Hill 46-yard line. Handoff going to the outside is the running back, number 32. Dedrick Henderson. I keep wanting to say Hendrickson. Diedrich. Henderson, the ball carrier that time. Not, you wouldn't think that on a Saturday afternoon that would be a tongue twister, Mike.
Oh, well, anything can happen on a Saturday afternoon, especially after a long week before getting here. But, yeah, think of Henderson, Ricky Henderson, you know, a baseball player.
Yeah, with plenty of speed. Second down, 7 yards to go at the 49-yard line. The shotgun formation, pass complete. to the tight end and headed to the outside. First down inside the 30, inside the 25, down near the 22-yard line. Big carry as the pass actually, I believe, went to number 30, Tim Nelson. Nelson, I believe, was the man, number 30, running back. Slipped into almost a tight end position and then slipped into the outside there. And so Luke to Nelson, and boom, boom, suddenly it's first down and 10 at the Dixie, mark it about the Dixie 22-yard line. So Inver Hills, down 20 to nothing, starting to show the firepower that they were expected to have. Tight end shifts to the left side. That's Joe Lutz, the brother of quarterback Jeff Lutz. Yes, in motion, wide receiver, back to pass. Jeff gets a little running room, but not enough. It flips and goes down near the 25-yard line. So a loss of about 3 yards on the play. John Baker on the tackle, also in there on the sack. Let's double check. It looks like Howard Reeve once again, among others. So a loss of about 3. Move it back to the Dixie 25-yard line. Second down, about 13 yards to go for the Giants. Quarterback back into typical formation, in motion. Wide receiver left to right this time. The little squib pass goes to the tight end, coming to the inside and into the outside, Joe Lutz. So Lutz to Lutz. Did I say what I thought I said? Lutz to Lutz picks up some good yardage inside the 20, down at the 18.
Now, how come you can't get Henderson and you can say Lutz to Lutz three times quickly in a row? But that's absolutely what it was. That last play previous, that was very interesting. They sent a man out wide. He stood on the end line, then came back in to block. And they're trying a few different plays, it looks like.
A little bit of razzle-dazzle on the Inver Hill side. Wide receivers each side. Shotgun formation. Jeff Lutz back to pass. Has Wayne Hawkins in the end zone. Hawkins just a little too big. Back there on the coverage is Sid Smith. Hawkins was there. The pass just off, just a little bit overthrown. Incompleted pass. Keep it at the 18-yard line of Dixie. Make it fourth down and 6. Field goal situation coming up. So we're being down 20 to nothing in the first quarter. There's still 7:07 left. There's plenty of time to come back, Mike.
Yeah, plenty of time. I think at this point they'd be extremely happy to get some points on the board, get the goose egg out of there, and I would expect them to go with the field goal. But, you know, we'll see in just a moment. But they've got to get something on the board, and after this long drive, you don't want to come up empty. You want to get something on the board. Looks like the field goal kicker is out there.
Out there to hold is number 9, Tim Amelsi. And let's check on the kicker. The snap, the kick from the 26-yard line. It is up. It looks good. No, it drifts to the right. Just a little to the right. And the kicker kicks off his shoe. A little upset there. Glazier, the man, the defensive back, missed on the field goal attempt. So from 36 yards away, Inver Hills getting closer, but still no score by the Inver Hills Ball Club. And so with 7:07 left in the first quarter of play, Dixie takes over. First down and 10 at their own 20-yard line. Last time out, Inver Hills able to stop Dixie. In fact, put them in reverse. A triple stack on an eye. And a long count, maybe too long. The officials, do we have a flag? No, we have a timeout call by Inver Hills. 7:07 left in the first quarter, 20 to nothing. Dixie back in 60 seconds. Five formation for Dixie. In motion is the tight end, who is actually the front man on that eye. That's Alfred Sifunu, and there's a flag on the play. Do we have procedure against Dixie? Almost, and are we actually supposed to start this play, sort of play? Inver Hills stepped across the line. Encroachment against Inver Hills. A brand new formation for Dixie.
Yeah, different formation. I think that time just one.
Office Supply, Jones Paint and Glass, Motorsports.
We have a carry by Dixie. Got a couple of yards after that 5-yard penalty. We had a little bit of technical difficulty there. Handoff goes to Greg Stokes this time. And from the 25-yard line after that penalty, the 5-yard penalty, Greg Stokes takes it into first down territory at the Dixie 32-yard line. First down and 10 at the Dixie 32. As Dixie moving with the football now for the Rebels. 6:06 left in the first quarter of play. 20-0. Dixie in front of Inverhills College. I formation on the running backs. More of a normal eye. Handoff goes to Sean Hutchinson. Breaks through at the 40-yard line. Cutting to the outside. Hutchinson on his horse. At the 50-yard line. At the 40 of Inverhills. Steps out of bounds at the 34-yard line. The official, I think, is going to mark it at the 35. But Sean Hutchinson, creative runner that time, Mike. And a little bit of a Thomas Edison, invented some moves.
He did a tremendous job, and I actually think perhaps if the man hadn't been in front of him, he might have got a few more. The man I'm talking about, the man in the striped shirt, but he had to stop, reverse his direction, and stepped on the sideline. But he busted at least 2 to 3 tackles right in the middle of the field before he got out to that outside, and give the rest of the Dixie offense some credit as they cleared the way for him. But what an exciting runner for Dixie College.
First down and 10, put it at the Inverhills 35-yard line. First and 10 for the Rebels, and Sean Hutchinson establishing himself as one of the premier runners for Dixie. Dixie has had 3 outstanding running backs in the last 3 years. Hand off, or the pass intended to the outside to Brent Byberg, thrown just slightly over his head, incomplete. There, right in the lap of Brent Byberg, or of Brooke Burley, the quarterback, was big number 75, Tony Couts. Couts, a 6'3", 230-pound freshman, was right in the face of Burley when he let go of that pass.
Yeah, but the pass was not that bad. A little bit too long as Nyberg again looked back to the inside and had to try to take it right directly over the shoulder, looking back into that sun, and just couldn't quite haul it in. Did get a hand on it, but it dropped incomplete.
20-0. We're still in the first quarter. Dixie with a huge lead right now, but Inverhills trying to stop the Rebels. Wide receivers on each side in motion. Tight end Alfred Sapunu, right to left. Handoff goes to Hutchinson. Cuts to the outside. Hutchinson cuts behind one blocker inside the 30 down near the 27-yard line. Had the blocker out there. That was big number 69 for Dixie. Buzz Eckhart out there. Threw a great block, and Hutchinson cut behind him to get some good yardage. Not enough for the first down. Mark it at the 27 of Inverhills. Make it third down, about 2 yards to go. Hutchinson on the way right now with some huge gains. The record for most rushing yardage came in the first year of this bowl. Penny Unga, who was a star, All-American candidate at Weber State College, had 273 yards in this game. Handoff goes to Hutchinson. Has the first down. Hutchinson by inches. Grabbed around the waist and thrown back by number 33, Charlie Drake. Also in there on the tackle is Darren Glazier. Glazier and Drake. Enough for the first down, though? Yes, by about a half yard. First down and 10. Mark it at about the 24-yard line of Inverhills. So Dixie on the move, and Sean Hutchinson a good part of that.
Yeah, 7 carries so far for a total of 64 yards, including that 133-yard just a few moments ago. So he's having a stellar day, first quarter and 64 yards on the books.
Once again, in that triple I formation, this is time they start the tight end in the front end right behind the quarterback, and then he starts in motion. Movement along the defensive line, yes. Handoff goes to the fullback, Rod Staley. A burst up the middle inside the 20, down near the 19. So a 5-yard burst by Staley. Brings it down to the 19-yard line. Second down, about 5 yards to go for Dixie at the Inverhills 19-yard line. Alternating fullbacks, Greg Stokes and Rod Staley. Alternating, bringing in the pass play. Just a reminder, a little later this evening, 7:15 broadcast time, Dixie versus College of Southern Idaho, a matchup of a couple of former national champion basketball powers. And following that, we'll have the Jazz and the Sacramento Kings right here on KDXU. Fafunu in motion, tight end, left to right. Pitch goes to the tailback. Hutchinson gets a block, has the first down, has it inside the 10, has the touchdown. Buzz Eckhart slapping hands with lineman Scott Brumfield, and they deserved it. That left side of the line broke it open for it.
Totally broke it open, pushed the defense right back into their own backfield, and I believe it was Stokes who I believe was in that time, threw a tremendous block as he was leading the play. Hutchinson was the deep man of that I formation,
He had one block, and that's all Hutchinson needed to scamper the 19 yards into the end zone.
Second score of the day by Sean Hutchinson, and could this be a rout? We'll find out. It's 26 to nothing, Dixie, with 3:51 left in the first quarter, and Frank Lemon on for the fourth time to try to complete that seven-point score. Does for the third time make it 27 to nothing, Dixie, as the kick is good with 3:51 left in the first quarter, back in 60 seconds. Scott Goplin back deep to receive. Not Scott Joplin. Goplin takes it at the four-yard line. Had a big run back last time up to the 20. Now up the middle again at the 25, down near the 29-yard line. Goplin rolled down there by number four, Britt Johnson. Johnson, who has been an outstanding defensive back for Dixie, although has not played that much in the defensive backfield in the last several games. A little bit on the kamikaze squad this time. Stuck his nose right in there.
Yeah, went right in and went right after it. The runner looks back, looks good, Goplin, coming from. He finds that crease in the middle. Looks like there's nowhere to go. Suddenly he squirts through. Last time he got a big break. This time he got out to the 29. Still good starting position for the Giants.
First down and 10. Jeff Lutz, the quarterback. Joe Lutz, the tight end, shifts from the left to the right side. Purple pants, white jerseys, yellow helmets. It's colorful out there. The lob pass coming to the outside. Complete to Wayne Hawkins at the 50. Dragged down from behind. A little swing pass to the outside. Finally brought down by Kaylor Daly. It's first and 10 at the Dixie 41-yard line. Wayne Hawkins the man. Bryce Peterson out there on the coverage also.
Bryce Peterson was right on him. That pass had to be absolutely perfect, and it was. It caught him right in stride, and Peterson couldn't get him down again as the saving tackle coming up about 10 yards further down. So we're seeing, even though they're down by a lot of points right this, they're not by any means going to sit back and let this one get out of their hands. They're still going to go for it.
Triple stack to the right side. Three receivers, no running backs. And Jeff Lutz, two receivers on the left side. Give you an idea what's going to happen? Yes. Pass. Complete. No. Drop. Intended out there on the left side. It looked like to Barry. Let's double check. No correction to Pison. John Pison, wide receiver, little 5'7", 165 pounds sophomore from Edina, Minnesota, or Edina, I believe it's pronounced. Incompleted pass. So you send five guys out there, two on the left and three on the right. It's a pretty foregone conclusion unless the quarterback decides to keep it. It's not a running play.
I'm pretty sure they're going to pass it. Anything, kind of a misdirection. The flow really was to the near side of the field. They threw back to the short side, but it was incomplete.
Ditto, 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 ditto. This time the quarterback is in the shotgun formation, Wayne Hawkins. Now the quarterback on the draw. Lutz gets inside the 41 down near the 36-yard line. Kaylor Daly came up for the tackle, also up on the tackle. It looks like Sean Dunn. So let's Dunn or Peterson. It's 26. That's Dunn that time. So Lutz does a little bit of everything and is needing to put it at the Dixie 36-yard line. Third down, 5 yards to go, Mike.
That was a good call, I think, that time. They've got to keep the Dixie defense on it. They can't just pass, pass, pass. They've got to try running, and that time they took the quarterback draw.
Shotgun formation again. This time two running backs there, too. Back to pass. Lutz. Lutz under pressure. Escapes one potential tackler. Throws the pass back the other way. Has it complete to his tight end, brother Jeff, or Joe, inside the 35, down near the 33-yard line. So Lutz to Lutz again. I love it. Stopped at the 33-yard line. Gain of 3 yards out of play. Fourth down. Couple of yards coming up. About 2.5 yards almost. And is it a punting situation or will Inver Hills go for it? It looks like they may be going for it, Mike. Down 27 to nothing.
I think that's what they have to do. They've got to get some points on the board. The only other chance they had was a field goal attempt, and that was a little wide. So you got to do something and got to get it going right now.
Dixie with five defensive backs, and Kaylor Daly is the man charged with chasing Wayne Hawkins. A little bit of a stagger step. The pass complete to Hawkins. No, dropped by Hawkins. Daly was right there. So Daly, as Hawkins runs along the line of scrimmage or behind his line, he will start running, then stop, then start running, then stop. A little bit of hesitation there. Kind of like Satchel Paige's pitching way back when. And Daly was doing the opposite number on the defensive side. Incompleted pass. Dixie takes over at the 33-yard line. So with a minute 54 left in the first quarter, it's first down and 10 for Dixie at their own 33-yard line. Dixie with a healthy 27 to nothing lead. Not a bad crowd today. Not a packed house, but pretty near close, as they would say. Pretty near.
That's exactly how I'd say it. Pretty near full here. I guess we'll have about 5,000 capacity, probably over 4,000 people here.
Wide receiver, one to the right, one to the left. Tight end to the left. And under pressure is Brooke Burley. Burley is going to be sacked inside the 25, down near the 23. There on the tackle, number 44, that's Earl Dunklin again, also on the pressure, is Chris Bierbauer. Bierbauer and Dunklin. The Dunklin made the initial contact. Bierbauer followed up, make it second down. Loss of almost 10 yards, yes. Make it second down and 20. Put it at the Dixie 23-yard line. So Hutchinson goes forward. Burley goes backwards so far today.
That's the way it's been. Burley's had one forward pass for 15 yards, but he got a TD and two sacks for minus 15 yards. So he's even.
High formation on the running backs again. Tight end slotted to the right. No motion this time. Hand off to Greg Stokes. Stokes across the 25. Dives to near the 29-yard line. Stokes, who may be headed to an Ivy League school. I know Cornell University has been recruiting him out of junior college, which is kind of a rarity. But an outstanding four-point student. Young man from Idaho, your old home state, Mike.
Well, yes, we're all like that up there, Larry. At least he is, I guess.
You're from Perth.
Yeah.
Shelly?
Well, very, very close. Yeah, Shelly. Very close up there.
He's from McCall. That's close. No, McCall's still there over on the other side. Back to pass. Brooke Burley has plenty of time. Throwing to the outside. Intended for Nyberg. Almost intercepted out there by Sean Bradford of Inverhills. Incompleted pass instead. So it's fourth down coming up. Fourth down, about 14 yards to go. Brent Nyberg was headed in the proper direction, stumbled a little bit, and so never caught up with the pass, Mike.
He almost turned around and looked, but the ball was so high over his head, I think he, for a moment, thought there might have been some other receiver down there behind him, but it wasn't, and it was almost intercepted.
Nyberg stumbled in his pattern, though. Would have been there if he had not. The punt by Carter. This time, Inverhill saw that one coming. Taken at the 40 or at the 37-yard line, trying to retreat to find some running room and not getting any running room is John Pison. So the punt by Dallin Carter with 13 seconds left ends up being taken at the Inverhill about the 37-yard line and is dropped back to the Inverhill 34-yard line. So a loss of 3 yards. By Pison, first down and 10. 13 seconds left in the first quarter. Put it at the Inverhills 34-yard line. 27-0, Dixie with the lead. Boom, boom, boom. Sean Hutchinson has already tied the Rotary Bowl record of most yardage gained, or most touchdowns by rushing. A hold. Or illegal use of hands? Let's double check it against Inverhills. 15-yard penalty. So it'll march it back even more. I didn't see the flag. Put it at the... must confess, I didn't see the flag. From the point of the hold, it goes back from... goes back to the... about the 20 and 19-yard line. It'll be first down and 10 at the Inverhills... no, correction, 24-yard line. Shotgun formation, Lutz buzzes the pass, but slightly behind. Number 30, Tim Nelson, running back, out of that backfield, out there on the coverage. Defensive lineman, or linebacker, David Morrison. Incompleted pass. So Lutz, Jeff Lutz, 6'2", 187-pound freshman quarterback. The young man from almost Invergrove, from St. Paul, Minnesota. Second down, 10 yards to go. A young man who's going to get better next year.
Yeah, he's doing very well. He looks like he's strictly a timing quarterback. All his routes they run are timing. And so far today, his time has just not been quite on.
Receiver in motion, left to right, back to pass. Jeff Lutz, under pressure, will be tackled from behind. Blindsided by Rich Cafusi. And Cafusi, coming in from the right side, ends the first quarter with a sack on the quarterback. End of the first quarter, 27-0. Dixie, we'll be back in 60 seconds.
Right now,
the first dignitary was, we missed it. It was Governor Bangeter. I didn't recognize him with a hat on.
Kind of embarrass ourselves up here. Our own governor shows up. And anyway, so they've also introduced the presidents of both Inverhills and Dixie College. So a lot of dignitaries at this game.
Wow. Yeah. Second quarter about ready to get underway. 27-0. Dixie with a healthy lead over the Inverhills Giants. After that sack, mark it back at the 16-yard line of Inver Hills. Third down, 18 yards to go. Dixie doing a little flip-flopping of linebacker and defensive back. Shotgun formation, pressure. Jeff Luth will be tackled again. Coming in from the outside, three guesses. Rich Kafusi. Kafusi, whose brother Steve left Dixie to go on, play 2 years at BYU, and then is now with the Philadelphia Eagles. So two straight sacks by Kafusi. Left in the first quarter of play, and Dixie with the football, or Inver Hills with the football. The punt, it'll be short, get a little bit of an Inver Hills bounce, and will be taken out of bounds by Parker Ragsdale. First down and 10 for Dixie. Dixie with the football. Well, With that touchdown pass reception making the difference right now, as it's 34-0. Another difference. That's the second reception for a touchdown. The kick taken by Goplin at the 15-yard line. Goplin across the 35 down near the 40-yard line as Goplin went to the outside. So Goplin, 7 seconds left in the first half of play, gives Inver Hills good field position across the 40 at the 41-yard line. So from the Inver Hills 15 to the Inver Hills 41-yard line by Goplin. Make it first down and 10 for Inver Hills. Still looking for their first score of the game. And right now the Minnesota team is being dominated by Dixie, 34-0. Jeff Lutz, the quarterback, back in that shotgun formation, 34-0. It's a long ways back. Lutz throwing, has it complete. Right to the 45-yard line, almost to the 46. Complete to Tim Nelson. 1 second left. And we may have a timeout coming up for Inver Hills. Let's see if they have called a timeout. They have with 1 second left. The ball at the 46-yard line. Let's just take a 30-second break. We'll be back in just a moment. Second down, about 5 yards to go. Put it at the Inver Hills 46-yard line after that completion to Tim Nelson. One more play before Inver Hills will close out the first half, and so will Dixie. Dixie 34-0 on the plus side of that score. The snap comes back high. Luke throws over the middle, a little wobbly. It's intercepted by Howard Reeve at the Dixie 35-yard line. And that's the way the first half ends, maybe appropriately, 34-0. Dixie with the lead at the half. Back in 90 seconds. Back at Hanson Stadium. Let's recap the first half scoring. And a lot of things set up by turnovers here in the first half. The Inver Hills began with a football, but Jeff Lutz fumbled the football with 14:40 left in the first quarter. Sid Smith took it and ran it back almost 13 yards to set up a first down and 10 for Dixie at the Inver Hills 19-yard line. Four plays later, from 5 yards out, Sean Hutchinson began a run that produced a score. The point after was missed by Frank Lemon to make it 6-0. 2 plays later on offense by Inver Hills, a pass interception by Cater Daly and a run back of 4 yards set up a first and 10 at the 16-yard line, and the first of 2 touchdown passes from Brooke Burley to Brent Nyberg made the score 12-0. Point after good by Frank Lemon made it 13-0. And then the third score came on a fourth down and 19 situation. The first punt of the day for Dixie College. Instead, Inver Hills did not cover the wide receiver on the punt formation, and Dallin Carter put the pass to Nate Hansen, and a 59-yard touchdown pass completion from Dallin Carter to Nate Hansen. For the third time this year, Carter has picked up a pass, a score by way of passing from a punting formation. That made it 19-0. Frank Lemon added a point after to make it 20-0. Then the next series of downs finished with a 19-yard touchdown run by Sean Hutchinson, his second of the day. The point after good by Lemon, and it's 27-0 with 3:51 left in the first quarter. And that's the way the first quarter ended. And that's the way it looked like the second quarter was going to end also, until, with 13 seconds left in the first half of play, the pass from Brooke Burley to Brent Nyberg, 34 yards out, and that's our J&J Building Supply key play of the game. 34-yard touchdown pass from Brooke Burley to Brent Nyberg. Point after good by Lemon, and make it 34-0. Dixie leads at the half. University of Utah marching band. You can hear Duke Ellington in the background and Satin Doll. It's fun, Mike. This is spectacular.
Hey, they're doing a tremendous job down there and getting some well-deserved applause from the big crowd on hand here. It's nice to see something like this down here in Utah's Dixie. Bring the University of Utah band, well-known marching band, and it's just good to see them performing very, very well, and a good thing to have at a halftime at a great football game.
34-0, Dixie with the lead. Let's take a 90-second break, and we'll be back with the grand marshal of this whole get-together, Bruce Hurst, back in 90 seconds.
At Motorsportsland, they've got you covered for a limited time. Buy any new Bayliner Capri at the season's lowest prices and receive a rugged, custom-fitted all-weather canvas cover absolutely free direct from Bayliner. There's no better value on the water than a new Capri from Motorsportsland, and now they'll help you protect your investment while it's off the water with a new travel mooring cover valued at up to $350. Hurry. Don't miss this offer and take advantage of closeout prices at Motorsportsland, Southern Utah's Marine Headquarters.
Plan ahead and get ready for the holidays. Get ahead by getting your car in tip-top shape at AAA Tire and Service Center. With the best in Goodyear tires, you'll be safe to travel for months to come. Priced at only $29.95 for size P155-80R13s. So see AAA Tire and Service Center for your car needs. AAA Tire and Service Center, located at 776 South Bluff in St. George.
Right now at Steve Ogden's Carpets, we've got the biggest and best carpet deals of the year going. You know, amidst the bad economic reports for the state this year, we at Ogden's have had the biggest and best year ever. And to say thanks, for the holidays, we're going to give free labor, free turkeys, free interest with no payment till March. So come into our store at 205 West St. George Boulevard and get the biggest and best carpet deals of the year for the holidays.
Back at the Hanson Stadium at the half, it's 34-0 Dixie over Inver Hills, and a fantastic performance by the University of Utah marching band. They aren't doing much marching right now. They're just playing away right now. We have our grand marshal with us, Bruce Hurst, but before we get to you, you have a couple of young men here with you.
Yeah, I got a couple of my kids with me.
Let's find out. Your name is?
Ryan.
Ryan Hurst, right? What school do you go to? That one? That's the same one I went to. How old are you, Ryan?
Five.
Wow. And your name is?
Kyle.
Kyle, you got to speak up a little bit. This is radio.
John.
How old are you, Kyle?
Say three.
Either one of them left-handed?
No, I got my little daughter's going to be left-handed.
All right. Hey, Bruce, let's begin first of all. It must be fun to come back home every once in a while.
It's always great to come home. My son's in kindergarten now, and I don't get to come home for as long as I'd like to, but anytime I get to come home for just a few days and see Mom and all my friends and stuff, it's always nice.
I guess it's a coincidence, not so much from the bowl standpoint, but from your contract negotiation standpoint, you're getting all sorts of media attention from coast to coast.
Yeah, it's kind of getting out of proportion for my liking. It's generate a lot of interest, I guess, and it's flattering that to have teams that want you and stuff like that. There's so much speculation that is surrounding the whole thing right now that they're kind of putting the cart before the horse. Everybody's trying to guess what I'm going to do, and I want to get over with as soon as I can too. But I want to make sure I make the right choice. I'm not trying to lead this on or carry this on just for the publicity. I'd rather not have it.
I know Jeannie Cavett and Sandy Bannister came up from KFMB, the flagship station of San Diego, and presented a whole bunch of notes from San Diego fans trying to urge you to join the Padres.
They said there was a lot of real neat stuff in there. They had a couple of big envelopes full of letters and cards, and people sent things over their fax machines in San Diego, and it was really, really great. And, they've really shown a lot of warmness and kindness, and then they don't have to sell me on the city of San Diego, that's for sure. It's a beautiful place.
We even had a couple of notes here that were delivered to KDXU to pass on to you from some of the local fans. And they also had the big banner that says there are 2 million fans 500 miles south of San Diego. Flattering.
It is flattering. They had to go all the way to Ogden to get that banner, too. They've gone to the great lengths to do that. So they're to be commended for their creativity and their legwork and things. But it's, you know, it's really flattering. And hopefully I'll be able to make a choice here in the next few days.
If I may probe just a little bit, obviously the choice has not been made yet. What do you see? Is it down right between Boston and San Diego now?
Well, it's hard to say. California's still involved. You know, those two teams, the Padres and the Red Sox, have been in it the longest. And I've spent 13 years in the Red Sox organization. There's a lot of friends and people I really care about there. So it's going to be a tough decision. But I want to make sure I make the right one and do what's right for my family and I.
The money really isn't a factor as much anymore, is it?
Well, it really never was. I didn't go into the thing looking for the highest bidder or to get into a bidding war. Through the whole thing, we've never gone back to teams to say this is what they've offered us. You know, now you have to do better. We've never done that. I don't personally want to get into a situation like that. I just let the teams work it out themselves and pay what, you know, they feel comfortable paying and make the offer they want to make. I don't want to extort money from anybody or get into that position. And I went into that from the beginning. It, you know, the financial part really never was the primary concern, although it's important. You know, I've got to do that, and I understand that part.
Now, last night when I talked to you a little bit, and I noticed your eyes start to roll just a little bit when you said, "This is unbelievable." Did you ever think, ever, that Bruce Hurst would be in the middle of a bidding war almost?
No, not really. I never expected it. But, you know, there's dreams and things like that. You know, you sit and dream about what it would be like to be a free agent and then maybe hopefully have a good enough career, have people think about you in a light that they might want you on their team. And it's really flattering. And, you know, I'm fortunate that a couple of real good teams have shown interest in me, and teams that I think want to win and have a desire to, you know, to win a championship, and that's important to me, too. I'd really like to play in another World Series or two before I'm done. I really want to win one.
This is really kind of a whole different world than the average citizen is aware of. The problems of celebrity. I noticed you walking the gauntlet on the way up to the booth today. A lot of autograph seekers.
Well, you know, a lot of little kids and things like that. Sometimes I don't know, you know, how important pro sports really is. But, you know, when you see a smile on a little kid's face, then it's all worth it, you know, and you understand that they care a lot and they look up to you and stuff. So it's important that, I guess you set a good example, you know, and do what's right. You know, the kids are great and the parents are great, you know, and it's just really nice to have people look up to you.
As a Major League Baseball player, you're a very visible sort of person. Does it get tiring to live in a fishbowl?
Well, it's really not that bad. I mean, there's certain places that are worse than others. When people are around, when you're in an athletic environment, and that's what people's kind of interests are at the time, you know, it's a little worse than others. But usually, you know, I can go pretty much anywhere. Some guys, Roger, I know on our team, Roger Clemens has a hard time going very many places that he doesn't get sometimes mobbed, and it's kind of uncomfortable. But for the most part, people are really well-mannered and kind and understand when you can't quite fulfill all the requests.
The time demands off the field must be staggering. I remember Reggie Jackson saying that the peaceful time for him is on the field with the fans a little bit at bay.
That's there's probably a lot of truth to that. Sometimes, you know, the fun part, the part that you get paid to play is the baseball game itself, and sometimes all the stuff that surrounds the game, the media, you know, the fans and all of the requests that way for interviews and things like that sometimes get to be a little bit overblown, and sometimes if you're not careful you can lose perspective of really what your job is. So you really have to be careful and realize that the most important thing is getting ready to play professional baseball and make sure you do all you can to be ready to play.
There's really no training up through the minors as far as how to handle celebrity, is there? That's just something you're suddenly in the middle of.
Well, I don't know if it's really celebrity, but, you know, again, it's, you know, in the minor leagues, you know, you get 400 or 500 people in the stands, and maybe a reporter will show up every other day or something like that. You know, that's the only time you really get a chance to deal with it very much. Once you get to a city like Boston or New York and Eastern Coast where there's a lot of newspapers and there's a lot of interest and there's a lot of coverage, you know, you kind of get put under a microscope, it seems. And after a game, it's more like a press conference for a politician as to why he made this certain decision and things like that. And it gets sometimes a little overboard, and no, it's not prepared for in the minor leagues, but you better learn quick.
Well, national media attention. Suddenly, your face is on ESPN, on CBS, on NBC, on ABC. Friends of yours see you. Your family sees you. That must be a whole different world, too, to have so much media concentrating on Bruce Hurst.
Well, right now, it's a little more than it should be, or usually, or ever has been, I guess. But, you know, you just have to be careful and make sure you separate it, you know, not get caught up in that part of it. You know, that's just a real temporary thing, all that stuff. You know, the important stuff is, you know, how you handle yourself and make sure you're in your house when you're supposed to be in your house and, you know, being a good dad and all that stuff.
Does it help to have that sort of pressure to say, hey, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to keep on doing it. Does it give you a little extra strength personally?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I've got a great family and they're real supportive and, not just my wife and my kids, but, you know, my in-laws and my mom and my dad, brothers, sisters, you know, they're real supportive and they pretty much got things in perspective and they're stand by me and they know the real things about me and stuff and it's great that I have them and, you know, they care about what's best for my family.
Let's talk about career-wise. Struggled a little bit early, although you pitched very well. Then all of a sudden, you're suddenly national attention in the World Series. There's a special feeling about the Championship Series and then the World Series, isn't it?
The experience I had in 86 playing in the playoffs in the World Series was some of the most fun I've had, you know, in a baseball uniform. It was really, really exciting. You know, there's a lot of things that I got to do. I got to play with Tom Seaver for a couple of months, and that would always be, you know, great. And you get to play in New York. You know, New York and L.A. are usually the places that everybody thinks about when they think about World Series, and that was exciting, too. And to be able to pitch pretty well and come so close to winning it, you know, you can sit back and say all the things of what might have been, but I think the real bottom line, the thing that has the most value of anything is that we played well, we played with a lot of respect, and we cared about what we did, and I think we deserve a lot of credit for you know, going as far as we did and playing as well as we did.
The microscope situation. Bill Buckner, great career, but will always be remembered for the missed ground ball. Did he say anything to the team after?
No, there's nothing that has to be said. I mean, we know we're all in the same situation that he is. We have to stand out there in front of 50,000 people and a major television audience, and we're all, you know, prone to making a mistake. That's the nature of the game. Ball's been going through guys' legs for I don't know how many years now, and over 100. And there's, I don't know how many errors are made in the course of the season. It's just, you know, the timing of the thing. That's just the nature of the game. And regardless of where you play or how you play or the situation you put under, the game won't change. They can call it all they want and put all the labels they want on it, but the fact remains, sometimes the ball bounces funny, and that's just the way it goes.
This year, tremendous comeback. Was the manager the difference, Joe Morgan?
I don't know. He made a difference in us. He was a refreshing change, and he gave everybody a chance to play. I think John McNamara did an incredible job, and I don't think that him being fired and Joe being hired is the reason why we won. We have a talented team, the Red Sox do. They have a lot of talented players, and I just think that took over. You know, we just started playing the way we were capable of playing. The disappointing part of the whole thing is we just couldn't sustain it long enough in the playoffs. But, you know, it's not like we didn't have a chance to win all four games. It was a one- or two-run game late in the game, every game, and we just couldn't do what it took to win.
Good young talent with the Red Sox this year, but there's good young talent in the majors, period.
There is a lot of good young talent in the majors. There's a lot of great young players coming up. The crops of rookies the last few years, it seems to me that they're going to be players who are going to stay around a little longer than years past. You know, you have two or three good players, but we've had a real crop of young players that are going to make an impact on the game for years to come.
How many more years for Bruce Hurst?
It depends on the hitters and how my arm feels. You know, if I had to set a timetable, I'd like to play as five more years if I could. I mean, and then just reevaluate from there. But if I can continue to get people out and I enjoy playing, I'm having fun. You know, I wouldn't mind playing as long as I could.
Bruce, congratulations on the honor of being Grand Marshal here. Congratulations on a great career and best of luck in your decision. It's been fun to visit with you again.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Bruce Hurst, the Grand Marshal. Ryan and Kyle, too, here, the junior Grand Marshal of the Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl. Let's take a 90-second break. We'll be back. Recap the first half statistics. Dixie leads 34-0 over Inver Hills at the half. The third annual Sunbrook Dixie Rotary Bowl. Back in 90.
see the business team.
Tri-State Office Supply. Taking care of business means taking care of you.
We're the business team.
Tri-State offers a top-notch service department that will effectively and quickly repair your office equipment and keep your machines operating with minimum downtime. Modernizing your office, Tri-State has the largest selection of office supplies between Salt Lake and Los Angeles. Tri-State Office Supply.
We're the business team.
36 East Tabernacle, Tri-State Office Supply.
Come and celebrate Jones Paint and Glass grand opening of their decorating showroom. The top-of-the-line Fuller O'Brien paint is on sale now. Satin enamel is $16.99.
We have some yardage totals for us.
Some statistics, yes, Larry. Interestingly enough, in the first half, we talked very early. Sean Hutchinson had a tremendous start to the football game, and he picked up about 64 yards very early in the game. But since that time, he did not carry the ball once in the second quarter, but he has 83 yards on eight carries, so he's averaging just over 10 yards a carry here in his football game, and that includes a touchdown run of 19 yards. His longest run is 33 in the first half. Rod Staley was used mostly in the second quarter after only two carries in the first quarter. He also has eight carries, picking up 37 yards. Stokes had a couple of carries. He has two carries for 13 yards. In the passing department, Brooke Burley, if you look at it strictly in pass completions, it's not done all that well. He's five completions out of 11 attempts. Now, if you look at what he did in those five completions, he picked up two touchdowns, both to Brent Nyberg, the first one going for 15 yards very early in the ball game, the second one coming late in the ball game, a 34-yard TD. So out of five completions, two touchdowns. And, of course, Dallin Carter, one for one in the ball game on that fake punt and the toss out to Nate Hansen, good for 59 yards and a touchdown. And other runner, Lannis, also carried the ball one, two, three, four, five, six times for about 10 yards. So in the first half of play, Dixie mixed it up, going both to the run and to the pass. Brooke Burley, 5 out of 11, 8 carries each for Hutchinson and Staley. And I think we're going to see those two guys early in the game, but if the score doesn't change much, we'll see a lot of other names in the ball game.
Well, so far we have some records that have been tied already, and that deals with scoring touchdowns. On the run, the two touchdowns by Sean Hutchinson have tied score at the record set by Woody Wright and Ricky Johnson. Ricky Johnson of Independence, Woody Wright of Butler, and Finney Unga of Dixie. The passing touchdowns, receptions by Brent Nyberg tied his own record, and also that by Kelvin Menifee last year and Felix Williams of Independence last year, each with two touchdown receptions. And the two touchdown passes by Brooke Burley ties his own record, which he tied with Niaeli Capelli last year, Mike Millis of Independence last year, and Mike Gamble of Dixie back in 1986 as two touchdown passes in the game. So anything by anybody is liable to break the record here in the second half. 34-0, Dixie with a healthy lead at the end of the first half and will be receiving to begin the second half of action. Back deep to receive. Let's check. It looks like Nate Hansen, the short man, but the kick will come down to the 18-yard line, taken by Rod Staley. Staley up to the 30-yard line and down near the 31-yard line. So on the third quarter of play, we begin from the Dixie 18 to the Dixie 30, right around the 30-yard line, almost to the 31. Let's see where they'll place, just short of the 31-yard line by Rod Staley. First down and 10 at the Dixie 31-yard line. Ken McGregor and his wife, Larray, have joined us here in the booth, and my daughter April is up here also. We're having a lot of fun, Ken.
Yes, we are. It's been quite a game.
You enjoying the day so far?
Yes, indeed. It's been a very good event this year.
Great. First down, 10 for Dixie at the 31-yard line. Brooke Burley, the quarterback so far, all the way. Back to pass, Burley, the sophomore. Throwing to the outside, has a complete first down at the 45-yard line. Getting away is Kendall Smith. We've been waiting for Smith to get the reception. He's in Inverhills territory, down to the 46-yard line of Inverhills. So Burley drills one into the midsection of Kendall Smith, first down and 10. Put it at the Inverhills 46-yard line. Wild weekend so far, wild sports weekend for KDXU and also for our sister station, Easy 93. 14:35 left in the third quarter of play. This is...